Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
One is Mark and John's, the other, they love the holidays and the presents. It's Tool Queens, it's Tool Queens, Holidays Jubilee 2020, it's Tool Queens, it's Tool Queens!
Five golden rings.
Hello!
Welcome to Tool Queens, I'm John Flynn.
I'm Mark Rennie.
Mark, I'm so excited about our guest this week. Please let everyone know who's joining us.
He's a triple threat, a writer, director, comedian. You've seen his work on Cartoon Network, DreamWorks, Nickelodeon, and he's working on the upcoming Netflix show Spirit Rangers. It's Joey Clift.
Yay.
Hello.
There we go.
I've listened to the show a bunch, and hearing the hello live filled me with so much joy.
You know, well, that's all you. We can do.
We do what we can in these dark times.
We should say, if we sound insane, we're recording this at 5:39 Pacific election night, November 3rd.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're like a month ahead of time with this. So if we sound crazy, that's why.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things about podcasts from 2016 is you could tell very clearly if it was recorded before or after the election.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like a bit that I did and a lot of people did on podcasts in like October 2016 was just like, yeah, when Trump's president,
We're not making those jokes now.
No. I've learned my lesson to have no
don't
opinions. Yeah, don't tempt the gods.
Speaking of tempting, do you find like Christmas movies? Like we're in our holidays Jubilee 2020 and you're our first week of Christmas movies or holiday, whatever you prefer. Mm. Are Christmas holiday movies something you look forward to around December? Do they have any special resonance for you?
I would say, honestly, for a little while, in my 20s, I was a really big fan of like old school 1980s hip hop. And the only Christmas resonance for me was watching Run DMC's Christmas and Hollis music video.
Of course.
Pretty much every day over on a loop throughout December. And now it's like, you know, like I like Christmas, but I wouldn't necessarily say there's like one Christmas movie that holds like a huge level of like, oh, I got to watch it every year kind of resonance with me.
There's not a movie that you're like, it's not Christmas if I don't watch Elf or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think it's like, it's not Elf. I guess it's not Christmas if I don't come up with a witty tweet about Santa Claus.
Well, you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
Don't check my Twitter. It probably won't be a very good. Maybe I'll forget to tweet about Santa Claus. I don't know.
That's okay too.
Yeah.
I used to be a person, a kid, like when I was a kid, we used to watch A Christmas Story every year. And that was before they would show it once on like USA. And that was it before it became like a phenomenon.
Its own channel. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Because now I'm sick of it. And now like, I don't want to rewatch it anymore. I don't also want to watch Elf again. I want to watch ones I haven't, like I didn't watch in the last 5 years. Like that's or a new thing. Like I'm very excited for the upcoming Dolly Parton one, Christmas on the Square, a musical starring Christine Baranski.
Wow.
That interests me.
I would say that I'm a Dolly Parton fan, but not enough to like be up on what she's like doing recently, but I'm going to write that down. I'm going to check that out.
You check that out. Well, I will have a very witty tweet about it. I'm sure.
No doubt.
You're also like putting a high bar for yourself.
Well, that's true. A pun is the lowest form of wit. So maybe it'll just be a pun. I don't know. John, do you care about Christmas? Do you have one you watch every year?
No, not really. I enjoy like Christmas music. And in fact, today I allowed myself to listen to some Christmas music in preparation for this podcast,
really?
Including Christmas Time in Hollis, Queens, which is featured in this movie.
It's great.
Yeah. I mean, it is.
I didn't even make that connection, but yeah, that's the thing.
The category of like hip hop Christmas songs. It is kind of a list of one, and it is that song.
Wow, showing your privilege, John.
Is that true? Are there others? Please let me know. I want to hear them.
I'm sure there are.
Okay. I forget the name of it, but I know Kanye West had one. There's a couple, but
he has one called Christmas in Harlem.
Yeah.
Okay. Gucci Mane has Saint Brick Intro. I don't know. Yin Yang Twins, Deck the Club.
Okay. All right.
To promote an old thing, I actually in 2015 with my old sketch group did a complete parody of Kanye West's Yeezus, where we made all of the songs about Santa Claus. So it's instead of Kanye West thinking he's Jesus, it's Kanye West thinking he's Santa Claus. So it's like,
oh great.
Instead of like instead of new slaves, it was like new slays.
Cute.
Yeah.
Whimsical.
Instead of let's see, it was instead of I'm in it, it was I'm in it parentheses the chimney. That's probably my proudest joke from that. I guess that Christmas for me, it's not a movie thing. It's more like what I look forward to, especially working in the entertainment industry where like things tend to slow down for a couple weeks around Christmas. It's more like, oh, this is like the 2 weeks out of the year where I feel like everybody in the entertainment industry who are like kind of workaholics just have 2 weeks off to like be normal people. So by that, I mean, like we could like casual, I could text a friend and be like, yo, you want to get lunch today? And like,
the answer might be possible.
Or like, that's kind of my time where I just play a ton of video games. So it's like, it's sort of a just general relaxation. And yeah, I'll throw on some Christmas music. I'll listen to like Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You and all that stuff.
You know? Like that one?
Yeah.
I mean, wow, I like
hot
it.
Take.
I like it in the sense of, it's just like, yeah, I don't know. It just feels like a Christmassy song. Yeah, it's a classic.
Sure. I think she's going to be like how, like now you hear Bing Crosby and you're like, wait, he did songs other than Christmas songs? You know what I mean? I think Mariah Carey, this is her, I think it is like her definitive. This is what we'll think of. The first thing we think
like
of.
Like 50 years from now, kids will be like, oh, she does that song.
She does that. That's going to be, that's her legacy, I believe, is All I Want for Christmas.
Mm-hmm. She's like the Elvira of Christmas.
Something actually, now that you think about it, like the picture of it, she's wearing like a low cut red and like, so it's like, she's the Elvira of Christmas. That's a spot on comparison.
Thank you. I didn't even tweet that.
Yeah. Oh, you should save it for Christmas. That'll be your witty December tweet.
Well, you know, speaking of saving Christmas, today's movie is about saving a family during Christmas, you could say, or an office family. Today, Joey, you brought in Die Hard, Christmas classic. John, what's the deal with Die Hard?
Mark, let me tell you the deal with Die Hard. It was directed by John McTiernan. It was written by Jeb Stewart and Stephen E. D'Souza, based on the 1979 novel Nothing Lasts Forever by Roderick Thorpe. And Die Hard follows a New York City police detective, John McClane, who is caught up in a
terrorist takeover of a Los Angeles skyscraper while visiting his estranged wife. It stars Bruce Willis, Alan Rickman, Bonnie Bedelia, Reginald Vell Johnson, Alexander Godunov, William Atherton, Paul Gleason, and Supergirl's hunk, Hart Bochner. Premiered on July 12, 1988, was a box office success, grossing over $140 million on a budget of somewhere between $25 to $35 million. It was the 10th highest grossing film of 1988. Initial reviews were mixed. Criticism was leveled at the violence, plot, and Willis's performance, but McTiernan's direction and Rickman's charismatic portrayal of the villain Hans Gruber were praised. The movie received 4 Academy Award nominations: Best Film Editing, Best Visual Effects, and Best Sound Effects Editing, which all lost to Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and Best Sound, losing to the film Bird. It's considered one of the greatest action films ever made, and is also called one of the best Christmas films ever made, since it takes place on Christmas Eve. It inspired a franchise that includes 4 sequels: Die Hard 2, Die Hard with a Vengeance, Live Free or Die Hard, and A Good Day to Die Hard, video games, comic books, toys, board games, clothing, and collectibles. And that is the deal with Die Hard.
Wow. Joey, we asked you to bring in a holiday movie and you chose Die Hard. Why Die Hard?
I guess that for me, I was trying to think of like the rubric of like, you know, the quest to discover the gayest movie. And I was like, sure. And I was like, I feel like Die Hard weirdly might score high on like the previous rubric established in this show.
Is it a movie that are you like, are you a fan of Die Hard? Do you like?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Die Hard was, Die Hard was definitely one of those movies where for a couple of years it was in my watch every year category. By that, I mean like 2 or 3 years or something like that. And, you know, it's just a good action movie. Like, yeah, it was a brief window where I was like, I think that I was in the early end of the like, Die Hard is a Christmas movie, so I'll watch it on Christmas kind of thing. And then like, after watching it twice, I was like, yeah, I get it. It's a Christmas movie. I don't need to like prove it to myself every year.
I think that debate has been settled once and for all, that annoying, obnoxious debate.
Where do you land on it?
It's absolutely a Christmas movie. How is it not a Christmas movie? It's set at Christmas. Do you not think it's a Christmas movie?
I mean, ultimately, I don't care. I think Christmas movies, though, I think tend to be very sort of like self-obsessed, and they tend to be about Christmas and about like reaffirming Christmas, or like Christmas is a huge plot point. And I don't think that's true of Die Hard. I think the Christmas part is more sort of background decoration. But if you want to call it a Christmas movie, you go right ahead. I'm not going to stop you.
I mean, honestly, I would say like Christmas isn't like a genre. It's just like you can't, because there are like dramatic Christmas movies. There are like comedy Christmas movies. You know
right,
what I mean?
But they all
like,
tend
so
to be like
Christmas action.
The fact that it is on Christmas tends to be more like,
well, this has a Christmas
essential
office party, and
sure,
the rest
but
of the
you
office
could have
is cleared out.
That's true, but you could have an office party. You know what I mean? Like you could make Die Hard not happen on Christmas, and it would not greatly affect the film itself. As opposed to like most Christmas movies, I feel like there's something essential to the story that it happens on Christmas, or like this idea of like Christmas, the idea of Christmas
plays into
being,
the plot,
being part of the plot or part of what like everyone learns or like contributes more to the plot than it does.
Well, you didn't
Die
bring
Hard
up these complaints with the Gremlins.
Oh, okay. Mic drop. I just want to chime in to say at first, honestly, when I pitched this movie to Mark a few weeks ago, I was full on Team Rennie of this being a Christmas movie. But then, like, I honestly have thought about it a little bit over the past couple weeks. And okay. I'm just like, I guess it's the same reasoning behind, like, if a movie has, like, I'm Native American. If a movie has, like, a Native American character, does that make it a Native American movie? You know,
right,
it's like,
right.
So it's sort of like, you know, I think that there is some argument as to whether, like, is this a Christmas movie? What is a Christmas movie?
Right.
Like, I don't think if a movie is set around Christmas, it's definitely a Christmas movie, because it could just be like a setting thing. You know, I guess that it's like, what are Christmas movies? Are Christmas movies are about hope and family. And I guess that in that regard, it's a Christmas movie. Like,
and the amount of sleigh bells on the soundtrack.
Yeah, the amount of
constant
sleigh bells.
Sleigh bells. Never heard of so many sleigh bells on a soundtrack in a non-Christmas movie, apparently. John, what's your what baggage are you bringing to Die Hard?
I first saw Die Hard maybe 2 or 3 years ago, because I hadn't seen
really?
It.
Really?
And former guest of the podcast, Will Hines, was like, I can't believe you haven't seen this movie. So he brought it over and he forced me to watch it. Forced is a strong word. I invited him. He was allowed. I welcomed him into my house.
He politely requested it.
I thought when I saw it then, I thought it was great. Watching it again this time, like rewatching it
like when I like called it up on HBO Max, I was like 2 hours and 12 minutes. That's longer than I remember it being. And so rewatching it again, I still thought it was very good, but I also thought we could cut 15 to 20 minutes from this movie and no one would care. But yeah, so this is really only the second time I've seen Die Hard. How about you, Mark? What is your history with Die Hard?
Well, this was a classic Rennie Brothers HBO, recorded off HBO, saved on a VHS staple.
Yeah.
Where we would put this in another movie because you could get two movies on one tape.
Sure. You could get three if you were smart.
But you lose quality. So we didn't
So what was the other movie that was on?
It might have been like The Lost Boys or Predator or like Aliens. Like we were big into action sci-fi. Yeah. That was our jam. So I've probably seen Die Hard 20-30 times. I also remember one time in junior high school, there was like some sort of like positivity like assembly where they brought all the kids to show like, hey, believe in yourself. And they showed a clip from, they showed the clip on the roof where he jumps off with the fire hose. Like they showed that clip to like inspire the children.
Self-confidence is important. Yeah.
And honestly, it got us pumped up. We loved it.
Yeah. All right. Like, I guess
it's so weird.
I guess that if John McClane believed in himself enough to jump off of a building with a hastily tied fire hose, I could believe in myself to do well on my math test.
Absolutely. Sure.
I could stand up to a bully. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think if you're a fan of action movies, like I think this, to me, I think it like plays like gangbusters. Like I thought it moved
really quick.
And I think I love that it just keeps escalating. Like it keeps the set pieces just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I think it's a modern action classic. I think it kind of set the template for like the next 20 years of action movies. Like everything after this was Die Hard in an X,
right?
You know, so I think it's great. And I love that Bruce Willis is like a vulnerable hero. He's not a Superman. It's like same reasons why I like Indiana Jones, is that he's not like an Arnold or a Sylvester Stallone. Like he gets hurt, he's wounded, he looks tired and exhausted, and I like all that shit.
Although,
and it's also it's got jokes. It's funny.
Well, what I disliked about I watched Die Hard 4. I have not yet seen Die Hard 5. Die Hard 4, I feel like, turned him into a Superman.
Right. And they got CG like, and...
Yeah.
Right. Die Hard 3, I watched at the beginning of quarantine. And that one really holds up. That one's
it's fun.
A blast. Die Hard with a Vengeance is great. All right, Joy. Well, let's get into it. As you may or may not know, but I believe you do, we are looking for the gayest movie ever. And we have a very complex and Byzantine scoring system with which to judge this movie. So we're going to go through a ton of categories. And in the end, we will find its final ranking. And at one point, you are going to add a category and it will be added to the wheel. Okay. So let me just, this is our top five or top four, actually, Christmas movies. This is where we're at for the Christmas movies. So in fourth of just the Christmas movies with a 45.92%, The Grotesque, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And third, Christmas movies, 47.80%, Scrooge. Second, with a 56.20%, Gremlins. And our current highest rated, gayest Christmas movie with a 66.49% is Meet Me in St. Louis. So if you had to predict, where do you think Die Hard is going to end up, Joey?
Wait, so what was the percentage of Meet Me in St. Louis again?
66.49.
So my earnest gut reaction is that it's going to be close to that. I think it's not like, maybe it'll squeak into the number one spot, or it'll be like between two and one, but I think it's going to be near the top.
You think Bruce Willis is gayer than Judy Garland?
Have you heard his album?
Yeah.
Was it Return of Bruno?
Yeah, of course.
You're right.
Yeah. Why'd you even ask me that?
Yeah. It is funny. He was just in Death Becomes Her, too, which That's was true. Like three we years, just... 4 years after that.
Mm-hmm. Death Becomes Her is a great movie.
It is great. I love it. John didn't like it. All right. Our first group of categories are the canon categories. So we're going to each score these on a scale of 0 to 100. Then we take the average of each. So the first category is, on a scale of 0 to 100, Joey, how would you rate Die Hard in actual gay characters?
Okay. So I think that I actually, when I was watching it, I watched it with this rubric in mind. There is one
character. I love the word rubric that you're using.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I take this very seriously. So there is that one guy that kisses Bruce Willis on the cheek at the party.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And in the credits, he's labeled as Kissing Man.
So like, though it's not like, like, though it's not, I don't think that he has any lines of dialogue, like, and though it's not stated, I feel like that was intended to be a gay character.
Because he has like Bruce John McClane has a kind of look like, oh, he does like a few times like Los Angeles. Oh, boy.
Right.
Or things that now are like totally taken for granted of like, no, that's normal.
Yeah. It was definitely like when I watched John McClane's reaction to that character, I was like, oh, yikes. But
it's a little, is he being homophobic or just more? Yeah. He's, I don't know. That was the only one I saw, really. I think that might be it.
So I guess that. With that character, I mean, so on a scale of 1 to 100, I don't know, like a 20, maybe a
20 for Kissing Man.
Yeah, 20 for Kissing Man. Because I feel like especially for an 80s movie, like that's, I don't want to call it groundbreaking because that is not groundbreaking, but it's sort of like, oh, I feel like there's like, I don't know. It's like they.
I do think also like in that moment, the fact that Bruce Springsteen didn't like, kick the shit. Did I say Bruce Springsteen? Sorry. The fact that Bruce Willis didn't like beat the shit out of him in that moment, sort of like in 1988, was like something.
Yeah, it's like, progress. Oh, there's that's like that's very progressive in, for 1988.
Give him a GLAAD award.
For
him
to, yeah.
For refraining like, from a hate crime. Wow.
Thank you. It's not a lot, but it was something, you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like it felt. It's like if Die Hard came out in 2020 and had that same representation, I'd be like a 5. But for 1988, like for inflation, like, yeah, 20. Sure.
I'll give it a 15 for that. Yeah, for inflation.
15. I'm going to give it a 10 for the casino. Give it an average of 15. All right. Next category. Drag queen inspiration. Could a drag queen watch Die Hard and come away with a whole book of ideas? I do think like the iconic, I do think his look with like the degrading like tank top with like a machine gun strapped around you, like a bloody with no shoes is a pretty strong look.
Yeah, but a drag queen without heels, is that a drag queen?
Well, excuse me, Michelle Visage. Not everything has to, we can break the rules a little, can't we?
Sure, we could, but I'm just saying.
Flesh-toned heels, maybe?
A tank top and no heels equals a drag queen. I'm not sure that can get on board with that.
But you could do like red heels for his bloody feet.
Thank you.
Okay.
Or like a little like Louis Vuitton. Like,
right.
Or like do some sort of glass like thing, you know?
Yeah, you do like flesh tone and like paint fake blood on the bottom of the heels. And that's a good look.
Like what would Alexander McQueen do? You know, think like that.
Yeah, I feel like there's that. And I feel like there's a couple of, though there are, I think, two or three woman characters with dialogue. Yes. Like I think that two of them have like are very shoulder paddy and
there's
kind of,
there's shoulder pads were definitely a conversation in pre-production with this movie. There's a lot of the guys
on the wall for that.
There was like a lot of like the suits were very tailored. There was
well, this is like the era of like the power suit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I do think Holly Gennaro is like a look.
Yeah, 100%.
You know,
Bonnie Bedelia.
Yes, I was referring to her by her chosen name. I did like her pregnant like secretary with like in that gray like jersey material with that giant like Christmas like it looked like a pinwheel
kind of thing. Yeah,
it was huge.
Right.
So hair tease to the gods.
So I guess if I were to put it on 1 to 100 for potential drag inspiration. I mean, it's still pretty low, but I would say like 35. Yeah.
I did Google drag queen. I did Die Hard drag queen inspiration. Nothing.
Yeah, same here. I got all RIP Chi Chi Devane. So I will give it a 15.
15. I think I'm going to go 35 as well, because I do think there it is like the John McClane Die Hard look is an iconic look.
Yeah, it's like if I was at a drag show and a character and like a drag queen came out dressed like John McClane from Die Hard, I would cheer. I would be excited.
That'd be very exciting.
Yeah.
All right. Our next, give an average of 28.33, in case I didn't say that already. 8.33 points higher than Pieces of April. Eat shit, April. All right. The next category, gay icons. How is Die Hard rating gay icons? Well, there is Bonnie Bedelia. Who doesn't love her and Heart Like a Wheel?
Okay, so
iconic though.
Parenthood, the TV show.
Yeah, so, again, iconic.
I'm saying she's not 100. She's not Cher, sure. But she's not zero.
So I'm gonna go on a walk here. So like, so follow me. So I feel like Snape from Harry Potter has weirdly become kind of a gay icon. Alan Rickman plays the role of Snape, and he also plays the role of Hans Gruber. So it's like, I feel like he's not, you know, he's not Dolly Parton or quite to that level, but it's like, I feel like Alan Rickman deserves a couple of points.
Also maybe for like Galaxy Quest too. That's like a very loved performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Snape is like a scenery chewer.
He's a lesser Ursula, definitely.
Yeah.
Lesser Ursula. Yeah, is he a gay icon? I guess a little. He's not a gay icon, I think. He's definitely an icon.
I think gay people wouldn't kick him out of a brunch, but I don't think people are like, yes, Rickman, come through.
Yeah, Alan Rickman, yes.
I do feel like he belongs to everybody, Snape. You know, like he's just kind of universally adored.
Exactly. Same thing with like a Reginald Vale Johnson or like even like a Bruce Willis, who you're like, yeah, I mean, like, sure, I enjoyed looking at Bruce Willis in that tank top, but is he a gay icon? I don't know.
I don't think anyone's making that case Willis is a gay icon.
Wait, what's the soundtrack for the movie? Are there any gay icons in the soundtrack? Does that count?
It could count, sure.
Sure. I don't have that off the top of my head.
As I quietly Google Die Hard soundtrack. Let's see.
We got Stevie Wonder, not a gay icon.
Not a gay icon.
Gene Kelly, Singing in the Rain.
Okay. Yeah.
That's a... Sure. Like digging.
Yeah. I feel like...
I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like we're stretching. I mean, I feel like gay icons is like 30?
30.
I'm going to go...
Have you ever seen Heart Like a Wheel, John?
I have not seen
the Shirley Muldani story. She plays the first female drag racer.
Oh, wow. I'll give it an 18 for a gay icon.
18. I'm going to give it a 15 for gay icons, giving it an average of 21, which is 16 points higher than Midsommar. Okay, not bad. All right, the next category.
Actually, I'm going to lower that. Hearing your scores, now I've got cold feet. I'm going to lower it to 25.
25.
You can stay. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Remember,
okay,
Joey, none of this matters.
Remember, democracy is in the balance right now as we speak. None of this.
Yeah, the democracy of whether Die Hard is the gayest movie.
The people we are, and I guess we're the Electoral College.
Yeah.
So.
All right. The next category, the male gaze. How horny is the camera for the male form?
Oh, I mean, I'm going to say 100. Like
100?
Yeah, wow. I mean, like, all those shots of Bruce Willis in the tank top. Also, just, like the amount of, like, not just foot shots, but iconic foot shots in this movie.
Yes. Yeah, it's almost Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah. It's, like, and there is female nudity in this movie, but it's, like, brushed aside.
You barely see it.
It's like whip away and like, let's see more shots of John McClane, Bruce Willis in that tank top, very sweaty.
It's almost as if the cameraman was me as soon as you see a naked woman. Whoop, nope.
Like, yeah, just like, oh, anyway. Anyway, like, oh, this guy here.
What's going
She's
on
got
on
a father.
Wall?
Right. She doesn't. We don't have.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Somebody's
but like,
daughter.
But look at this. Bruce, well, that's the son of Bruno. Yum, yum.
There's one shot where the guy, I think his name's Tony, he's like the blonde guy with the glasses. Wearing like gray sweatpants, hello, where the camera's like following him when he's looking for Bruce Willis, and you get a great shot of his ass.
Yeah, so like I think that like to me, this is the one where the movie is gonna like, you know, it didn't get a lot of ground in the previous categories, but I feel like male gaze, it's like that's where it's earning its ground back.
Sure.
And I guess they hired like all the henchmen are like they're all over 6 feet tall.
They're over 6 feet tall.
Oh yeah, they're all models, they're all like European
dancers.
Models.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do we think for the male gaze? I mean, and Bruce Willis's clothes are degrading the entire time. And also, we got to say it, this movie does show a lot of shaft.
Okay.
Wait, really?
Elevator shaft.
He means elevator
shaft. Oh, right. Oh, yeah. I was about to say, like, oh, I mean, maybe.
Was there
like...
a scene where Bruce Willis was at a urinal and we sort of had a side shot?
Yeah, was there a scene where Bruce Willis killed a terrorist with his dick?
Yeah. He died hard.
Die harder.
Yeah, die hard. That's why die hard. I get it.
So what do you want to give this for the male gaze.
I'm still saying I'm 100. I'm 100. Still saying 100 on this.
I think, yes, Bruce Willis, but there's never even like a gratuitous like, oh yeah, like he takes a shot. You know what I mean? Like, you could go farther. We could push this a little farther. So I'm going to give it a 78.
78. I'm going to go 83 because I do like the choice that he didn't find. Like, I feel like a more insecure director would find a way to quickly, he'll find another shirt or something. You know what I mean? Like,
right, yeah,
as soon as the tank top was, but I like that he just gets getting more vulnerable as the stakes get higher. What a perfect film. Given an average of 87, which is 17 points higher than Death Becomes Her. Okay.
Yay.
Another Bruce. All right, next category. Entrances with pizzazz. I mean, there's quite a few in this.
There are a bunch. I think that truck of the villains just like backing into the floating dock and opening up, and it's just like, here we are, boys.
Let's say John McTiernan, he's like a total like psychopath, I believe, and spent time in jail for embezzling or some sort of fraud. He's like a lunatic, but knows how to make a movie.
Yeah, I mean, now that you mention it, like Alan Rickman's entrance, like it feels choreographed. It feels like all those henchmen.
100% that's a musical
the day
number.
Before,
right.
The day before, we're just like, okay, you'll go left, you'll go left, you'll go right, and then I'll come out through the center.
Yes.
Okay, let's just run this once. And a 5, 6, 7, 8,
left, walk, walk, and intense, walk through the middle. Yeah, there's that. There's like, you know, I definitely feel like the limo driver crashing his limo through the through the ambulance, as well as out of the parking garage. I feel like he crashes through a wall.
Yes.
Yep.
And then, you know, I know that this is like technically the reverse of this category, but I really do feel like the end of the movie when Bruce Willis and his wife get into the crashed limo and they drive off to her house to fuck or whatever.
Sure.
Like, I feel like that's an exit with pizzazz for sure.
There's a lot of pizzazz 100%. In that moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They could have called a taxi, but they were like, no, the busted
limo. We got
limo.
Argyle.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
He's also, still the on the body, clock.
That yeah. body dropping onto Al's car. That's yeah. an entrance with pizzazz.
You notice that person entering. Yeah.
Whoa. That changes the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I also thought when you see Tony in the elevator with the ho, 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 now I have a machine gun. That's a real moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That was good.
Someone even screams.
There's also the, I forget the character's name, but when the guy like, when the two guys come in to shoot the security guard when they first enter Nakatomi Plaza.
Oh, right. That's
it's
great.
Like, they're like dancing and spinning and yeah. they like shoot the guy and then jump over the thing. And it's like, that's filled with pizzazz.
That's true.
Right.
Another choreographed number.
Yeah. These also, are very dancey terrorists.
The safe opening is like kind of an entrance, like seeing the inside of the safe where they play Ode to Joy is like crescendoing. Mm-hmm. It's just like feels like such a triumph. So what do we... Also, Carl, at the end, when you think
oh,
he's
yeah, that's
dead,
an entrance with pizzazz.
He like, takes the cloak off, and he's been alive the whole time, and he has, like, the machine gun, and then, you know, shit happens.
Yeah. I'm going to say, so originally, I thought that this was going to be a little bit lower. Like, I was thinking it was going to be, like, you know, like, 40, 50. But honestly, you've reminded me of even more entrances with pizzazz. So, like, I'm going to say 70 on that.
That's my life's work, reminding people of entrances with pizzazz.
And you're very good at it.
Thank you.
I'm actually going to say 75 because I feel like all those entrances we talked about are really like solid, yeah. iconic, great entrances.
75. I'm going to give this a 90. I mean, this is what.
Wow.
What more do you want? Actually, 95 now that I think about
what?
It.
What?
Wait, yeah, I'm going to bump mine up to 75 too.
All right, John's going to accuse me of being a bully, but
no.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, giving an average of 81.67, which is about 20 points higher than in Terms of Endearment.
Yeah.
All right, the next category, strident women.
So strident women, I mean, his wife is very strident.
Bonnie Bedelia. She like sasses those, you know, these hostage people, these criminals,
terrorists.
You know what I mean? Well, they're not terrorists, but maybe they are. But I also
but
think
the end credits, they're labeled terrorists.
Oh, they're labeled as terrorists. Yeah, she's sassy to them. I also think the woman at the call center when
loved
Bruce,
her.
When yeah. Bruce Willis is first like, all right, yes. fine. She was real strident.
Like, I feel like there are, once again, maybe four women characters
maybe.
In this movie
yeah.
with lines. One of them being the housekeeper. I feel like the housekeeper is the only not strident woman in this.
For sure.
So like, So, you know, if you were to put it into, like, you know, law of averages, 75% of the women in this movie are very strident.
There you go.
Yeah, I'll go.
Also, Holly punches Thornburg at the end. That was fun.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah, that was good.
What did you give it, Joey? I'm sorry.
So I would say, I think that 75% of the women in this movie are strident, but I would say that the stridentness of specifically Bruce Willis's wife and the woman at the call center put me up to, like, I'm going to say 80%.
I'm going to go 73.
I think it is just those two, but unfortunately for me, they're not in the movie enough.
Fair.
So I'm going to give it a 60. Giving it an average of 71, tying it with Midsommar. Okay.
Yay.
There we go.
All right. Next category. Might make up some points here. Macabre. How macabre is Die Hard?
I mean, it says die in the title.
There's how murder twisted. At a company Christmas party. How could you get more macabre than that?
Yeah, it's like the cover of the poster cover is a building exploding.
Yes. There is a more innocent time.
That's true.
It is I love somehow, like, just seeing all the close-ups of, like, the squibs exploding in people's legs.
Yeah, that's super gory.
It's super gory, but I love it.
Yeah, it's like everybody that dies in that movie, you're like, oh, they did. Like, there's no question. Then there's also the end, the terrorist who comes up at the end with the big gun. He's, like, covered in blood. I think that he also gets choked out at some point. A guy gets thrown out of a window and lands on a car.
There's also a lot of, like, gallows humor, which I would consider macabre, especially from, like, Dwayne. Like, we're going to need more FBI guys. I hope that wasn't one of the hostages.
Right.
Yeah, it is a very dark movie. I mean, I don't know. What do you guys think in terms of macabre rating?
I mean, to me, overall, it still feels like fun, like summer entertainment, you know, like it's not like a heavy movie. It's like, but there are, like, dark, fucked up jokes, which I think to me, and it's like, it is pretty violent. So I think it's not macabre. It's on the 50% end, the high 50%, of macabre-ness.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a Tim Burton movie where you're like, it's not, you know, like the world it's that ghoulish, it's set in is in of itself is not ghoulish. It's very cocaine fueled, but it's not, I would not say necessarily macabre.
Wait, yeah. Is cocaine macabre? What's the, because if the cocaine, if cocaine's macabre, then this is a pretty macabre movie.
Well, I don't think it's too fast. Yeah, exactly. It's too much of an
I feel like bar. a downers have to be, or more macabre, right?
Or some sort of, like,
psychotropic acid or something.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel like, him walking barefoot on broken glass and then sitting in
Annie
a
Lennox
bathroom.
Song.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, yeah, him doing
nothing
that.
More
and
macabre sitting, than that.
Him sitting in a bathroom and pulling glass out of his feet. Like, that's like, that feels pretty macabre.
Right? And he's, like, getting beat up. He's tired. He's exhausted. Taking hostages.
There's also, like, an indoor waterfall in this building.
Disgusting.
Right.
You actually, think that's macabre?
It's pretty dark.
An indoor waterfall in this movie that's on, like, the 30th floor.
Seems so dangerous.
Yeah.
How is that not going to leak? Maybe you guys have too much money. This has got to crash at some point. Yeah. Like, the economy can't sustain this.
Right.
So what do you want to give for macabre, Joey?
Yeah,
I'm gonna say for macabre, like, I want it to be higher, but I'm gonna say like 67.
Yeah, I'm gonna say 62.
I'm gonna go 70, just right on 70. Mm-hmm. Giving an average of 66.33. All right, this next category, I think you're gonna make up a lot of points here. Dramatic lighting.
Oh, yes,
there's a ton of it.
Very dramatic. If you like lens flares, this is the movie for you.
There's
you
a lot
like,
of lighting.
Unnecessary smoke. This is for you.
Yeah. I mean, there's, like, the entire sequence of him, like, crawling through the air vent, like, lit by a lighter. That's, like, a very dramatic lighting.
There's a lot of lighting and the light spilling on them, you know?
Yeah. There's a lighting effect. I'm sure they just called blinds lighting, because there were so many lights, especially in the beginning, where it was just, like, you just saw, like, the shadows of blinds off of everyone's faces. And it was very, like,
that's how you knew the sun was going down.
That's true.
Yeah, now that I think about it, other than the inside the airplane shot at the start of the movie, I believe that every shot in this movie is dramatically lit.
There's a lot.
I would believe that, yeah.
Or it's like that,
or the shot where they're they're at home calling the kids. It's like those sure. don't feel particularly dramatically lit. But I would say right. that like the vast majority of shots in this movie are dramatically lit.
Once we're at even then outside Nakatomi Plaza with like
where
the spotlights,
the floodlights, you know? Yeah. and all the explosions and the fires and the yeah. There's a ton
yeah,
of
like it. That's a whole sequence of like John McClane trying to shoot or the terrorist trying to shoot out the spotlights. Like yep.
mm-hmm.
Everything in the limo is dramatically lit because it's a limo. Like
there you go.
Sure.
Yeah,
setting like a mood.
Like the camera, the computer screen when the guy's hacking into the vault is dramatically really just every shot of Hans Gruber is dramatically lit.
Yes,
mm-hmm. him like getting thrown, him falling out of the window and like it's shot down is it's just like yeah. I mean, I'd honestly say like 93 because it's like 93% of the shots in this movie, probably more than that, are dramatically lit.
I think that math checks out. 93.
I'll give it an 86.
Wow, John's bias shining through like a LAPD spotlight. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it a 95. I think it's pretty great.
Nice.
Give an average of 91.33, which is 0.33 points higher than Edward Scissorhands. Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Not too shabby. Mm. All right, our next category.
Take that, Tim Burton.
Yeah. Boy, he's like biting his like spider-shaped pillow right now. The next category, vibrato. How would you rate the vibrato?
So, and in this category, in addition to literal vibrato, I mean, anytime they take a moment to give you something extra and they sort of zhuzh it up and give more than maybe it needs, but you'll like it. But I would say this movie is super vibrato.
Yes.
In that way.
We're having fun.
Like, even like Alan Rickman, like, listed, like, when the first time, like, they've got all them as hostages and he's just like marching through the crowd and like listing off their resumes. Like, that's so, yeah, that's like, absurd. The fact that there are two Agent Johnsons from the FBI, like, that just feels like a very, like, fun, silly vibrato y moment.
You know, that resume was one person, though. He's not listing all those guys' resumes. He's listing the one.
Yeah, but person, still, like, going
he's
down.
Listing,
like
what colleges oh, yeah. they went to. I mean, to me, so we're defining a vibrato as also just generally being extra,
extraness.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So to me, I feel like this gets a 100 in vibrato, literally, like just from the moment where Bruce Willis kills the first terrorist and then looks at his dead body and then looks at a Santa hat and then smiles and laughs to himself. And then the next thing that we see is he dressed this dead body like Santa Claus
yeah.
and wrote, "Now I have a machine gun, ho, ho, ho," and sent him down the elevator. That is the most extra thing that you could do in a stressful situation.
Like, he might be a sociopath. Like,
oh, yeah, 100%. No question. He is not well as a person.
Yeah.
It's also like he probably could have figured out a way to get across that floor without walking in that broken glass.
A bit of a martyr situation.
So yeah, like this is 100 just from like that, him being a sociopath moment alone, and then all the other stuff in this movie that's very, very extra.
Fair enough. 100.
Yeah, this is a pretty like extra movie. But I think like it's power or like it's the reason why it's so popular is because it's so expert at that. Like it does such a good job of each of those moments. So I will give it a, because there's not any actual singing, I'll give it a 97.
What are you talking about? There's like ho ho ho. There's like let it snow, let
ho,
it
ho,
snow.
Ho.
You know,
yeah, but
ho,
no
ho,
character
ho.
Within the movie. They just play a song where someone sings. No one in the movie.
Doesn't Alan Rickman
like
sing in the elevator?
There's not like yeah, a karaoke like part of this at their company holiday party.
That would make it less extra. That would make it more basic to me if they had.
Oh,
that.
Okay. Well, right. And let that reflect in your scoring.
What are you giving it, John?
I said 97.
Oh, 97.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give this a 90. I think it's vibrato, but I also think it's not I don't know. I like this heightened action reality of the 80s. I want to go back to it. I think camp is coming back in a big way in 2021, but that's just my theory. All right,
fingers
next
crossed.
Category. Footwork. I mean, how would you rate footwork in Die Hard?
Yeah, iconic.
It's constant.
I mean, yeah. Look at all the shots of his feet. There's a lot of footwork in this movie.
It's so much action choreography, so much like fighting, like I literally mean, also, trying to kick in the window on the fire hose with spearing blood on the window.
Yeah. I mean, we've also talked about, I mean, the just like the sheer choreography of the terrorists' movements. Like they right. had a week before this when they were going
like they went over the blueprint of the building and figured out the terrorist plan immediately. And then they were like, okay, now we need to figure out our dance steps, 5, 6, 7, right. 8.
Okay, like, let's take it from like we're in the
their preparation.
I'll stand here. Yeah.
Like if these terrorists put all this effort and energy into doing like a Broadway show, they'd probably make more money than they're trying to steal.
Well, it's a very tough business,
Mark.
Yeah,
that's the real tragedy.
Not everyone can write a
Hamilton,
you know.
You got Hans Gruber can do it, I bet.
Yeah, I feel like Hans Gruber's got, if he didn't die by getting thrown out a window, I feel like he would have a Hamilton in him.
He's got a Hamilton in him for sure.
So yeah, footwork. I'll put in another 100 because the footwork in this movie is so iconic.
I think so. 100.
I'll give it a 93.
93. I think you got to go 100. Also, just Carl. I love when they cut to Carl walking across the rooftop with his gun pointed up, like he's like a grand hunter or something. It's so like oh, he has. It's one of those shots. You're like, he has dance training.
Oh, that's another. Actually, I know we've already covered vibrato, but that was another very vibrato thing. Of why did that guy need a bigger machine gun? It's like it is just very extra that he assembled a bigger machine gun in the elevator. Why? Why did he need that?
I got to tell you, Die Hard just scored a 97.67 in vibrato, which is the highest in our last 13 movies since we've updated the scoring system. All right. This next category might be tough. Animal print. How would you rate the animal print in Die Hard? Do we see any? I didn't see any, but I miss things.
I think that so two things. I think that both nude women that you see in the movie might have been wearing some level of animal print. I feel like the woman that was like that was having sex in the office, hooking up in the office. I feel like, just like this is to my memory, I feel like her dress might have been kind of leopard print-y. And the nude woman who was like tacked up to the wall in the construction area, I feel like she had some. Like though it might not have been animal print, I feel like she was like in a jungle, so I think it was evocative.
I think there was like a snake in the shot. I think it was. Yeah,
she had big Sheena energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So, and you know, that's me. That's me definitely like grasping at furs.
Sure. grasping at furs.
Yeah. So you know, I guess 15. I'm gonna say 15.
15.
I'll say 8 because I didn't really clock anything, but. It's possible I missed it.
Yeah, I'm gonna say 5. 9 point, giving an average of 9.33, tying it with Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Okay.
Wait, what did it get on footwork, by the way? What was our footwork average?
Oh, 97.67.
Yay.
Which is
the highest
high.
We've gotten in the last.
The highest we've gotten in a while. All right, next category. Jolie, on a scale of 0 to 100, how likely are you to recommend Die Hard to a gay person?
I mean, I guess that's sort of, I guess that there are two different parts to it. Cause it's like, you know, for me to, so like for it, how, like, what is my likelihood of recommending this to a human would be 100. It's a classic, you know, it's a great movie. You know, I don't think that there are a lot of movies that I've seen where I'm just like, you know, who needs to watch this? A gay person. know, I don't think. Like Die Hard didn't clock for that for me, but I don't think a lot of movies would clock like that for me.
Have you ever seen either of the Mamma Mias?
I actually have not seen either Mamma Mias.
Oh, you see those, you'll think, you'll know who to see this.
Who are my gay friends? I gotta call them right now.
Make sure.
So I would say 50 by virtue of like, I would recommend it as a good movie, but not like I would not be like, this is a gay movie. You know, so I'd say like 50 on
50.
Likelihood of recommending to a gay person, and I would be just as likely to recommend this to a gay person as I would any person.
Understood.
Except for somebody whose family was murdered by gun violence.
Probably fair.
At a holiday Christmas party, you might be like, you know
at a holiday Christmas party in 1988 in an office in Los Angeles, I'd be like, oh, maybe not.
Just watch Elf again instead.
Right.
Unfortunately, you've just described every gay person.
Oh, jeez.
That's what makes us gay.
John?
I'll go 50 as well. I think it's like a good movie for like the reference and the sort of iconicness of it. And I do think it's a good movie, but there's nothing about it that is like, oh, you need to know this as a gay person. But like 50 feels right.
Right. I'm going to go 55 just because I think it's a, John thinks it could lose 15 minutes. I think it's a perfect film. I love it. I think it's great. I also love Richard Thornburg a lot. I think there's some fun. There's a fun creep in this movie, the reporter.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's great. So I'm going to give it an average of 51.67, tying it with Mermaids. Okay.
Actually, I'm going to wait. Can I bump up my score to 60?
You may.
Sure.
Now that you've made that point, and it's like, oh, there is that kissing man. So there is representation.
You will be seen. Yeah, I feel seen.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, yeah, that is, I'll say 60.
All right. Give it an average of 55, kicking in the teeth of Mermaids. Caught her in the net. All right. Now we are into the wheel category.
So these are all categories that previous guests have brought on. We put them on this wheel, which exists on an app on my phone, and we're going to spin it, whatever. Four categories we randomly come up with is how we're going to judge this movie.
I am so nervous.
Okay, here we go.
And at the end, you're going to add a category, Joey, that we will use for Die Hard and every movie going forward, because it will be then added to the wheel.
Okay, the first one is non-traditional murder weapons.
Okay, well, there's a lot of
mostly guns.
Mostly guns. Traditional.
There's the chain around the guy's neck. You know, I would say that that guy gets killed probably from getting thrown out the window and onto the roof of a cop car.
So gravity is
gravity.
That's kind of traditional, though. I would say a wired roof, a roof of a skyscraper wired to explode, is a pretty non-traditional way to kill somebody.
True.
I haven't seen
down
that
the stairs,
before.
Which is how like kind of the first guy dies, right?
I mean, have you seen that movie, The Staircase, though? That's pretty traditional, true. That documentary.
Is it traditional or did it happen one other time?
I think it's Psycho, it happens. So we've seen it. That's pretty well represented.
I think that there is one thing that I think gives this a higher score than I initially thought, and that's going to be a wristwatch.
Thank you, the Rolex.
Yeah. Hans Gruber gets killed off. That's also just a good setup and payoff of like, oh, that's her letting go of the...
That life, right. That world.
And even also says, I'll look at it later. I'm sure she'll show it to me later. And he sees it later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So like the wristwatch to me probably like honestly bumps it up a ton of points. I'm going to say 55. That sounds 55. That feels right.
I'm going to say there's not a lot of murders in this movie that you're like, I didn't see that coming. But the wristwatch does give you something. So I'll give it a 40 for the wristwatch.
What about the roof wired with explosives that blows up the FBI guys in the helicopter? You've seen that a million times?
I've seen, yeah, explosives in a building. Yes. I've
no,
seen that.
I'm talking specifically wired to a roof.
Okay. I'm maintaining my score.
What was it?
I believe it was 40.
40.
I was sad when Bruce Willis's wife's boss died. That honestly,
we like
upon rewatch,
that was sad.
Upon
yeah.
rewatch, I forgot about that. I forgot that he died, and he.
But
gets...
that gives the movie stakes. Otherwise, we wouldn't take these.
You need to have it.
Because also, that actor is really good. I think because as soon as you see him, you like him right away.
Yeah,
and he feels like a boss. He has that energy. Like, he has that gravitas to him.
Yeah, I get that. So I think I said 60. Yeah,
you said 55.
Oh, 55. I'm cool with that.
But I'm going to give it a 60 for that wired roof. They gave it an average of 51.67. All right. Spin that wheel again, John. Non-traditional murder weapons is from The Talented Mr. Ripley, featuring John's husband.
That's true. All right. Intensely close conversations.
Intensely close conversations.
Oh, this gets a pretty high score for that, in that I feel like every conversation that Bruce Willis has with his wife is intensely close.
Have a couple of those.
Terrorists have a lot of intensely close conversations.
That's true.
Pretty much every Reginald L. Johnson conversation between cop to cop is intensely close.
They're all huddled around that car.
Yeah, all huddled around that car. Bruce Willis and Alan Rickman, Hans Gruber is intensely close before Bruce Willis knows that he's Hans Gruber. That's like very intensely close because they're like pressed together. There's a lot of elevator conversations among the terrorists that are intensely close. So I'm going to say a 90.
90.
I feel like there's not a ton of intensely close conversations. And most of the conversations you think of when you think of this movie are like over the radio, like over sort of like communication devices. So I'm going to give it a 35.
35. I'm going to go 70. I do believe there are some, but not a ton. Given an average of 65. All right. Intensely close conversations is from Armageddon with Aaron Whitehead.
Okay. Here we go. Shattered glass.
Okay, 100.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, 100. This is, once again, the shattered glass in this movie is iconic. He walks through it with his bare feet, close up.
Part of the plot. Yeah.
Yes. There's also that one shot where the stuntman flies like head first into the shattered glass.
Yep.
Which is
that's
crazy.
Super cool. I mean, the roof of a building explodes, showering glass everywhere.
It's great.
The guy following on the car.
Yeah, the guy following the car breaks the window and the window of the car. I feel like probably the windshield of the limo shatters when it crashes into the side of the ambulance. So yeah, 100. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel very confident in that 100.
I'm going to go 99 just because it's not John Wick 3.
I do, rewatching this though, I do think this might have more than John Wick. Have you seen John Wick 3?
Oh yeah, John Wick 3 is incredible.
You have, John?
I have, yes. We might have seen it together.
I don't think so. I saw it with Betsy. I'm giving it 100. Giving an average of 99.67. Wow, did you luck out with that one?
Yes.
Shattered Glass is from a Suspiria episode, the 2018 Suspiria.
Okay, Sassy Best Friend.
Oh, I mean,
the closest would be Argyle.
Argyle is pretty sassy,
but he's not like a best friend, but he's kind of like Bruce Willis' only friend in LA.
Yeah.
Who's not Bonnie Bedelia.
Is Reginald Bell Johnson sassy in this?
He's more wry, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, Ellis is nobody's best friend.
No.
Yeah. Who, is Ellis the cocaine guy?
He's the cokehead. He's definitely sassy.
I mean,
he's a best friend to cocaine.
But Ellis treats himself like he acts like he's Bruce Willis's best friend.
That's true.
Yeah. So like originally when you said this, I was like, oh, that's going to cost us a lot.
But I think
we're
supposed to suspect that he and Bonnie Bedelia might be having a thing.
No way. You're crazy. That is,
I think it's supposed to potentially. Well, what I found out was this in the book that this movie is based on. It's not the John McClane character. It's not his estranged wife, it's his daughter. And so in the book, the daughter and the character that is Ellis are a couple or are like dating.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why I told you that, but I found that information. You're correct. It is not. It is different.
Yeah. I think keeping Ellis in mind and Argyle in mind, I feel like those two characters together, I would put that at a 40.
40.
I'm going to give it 20 for Argyle.
20. I'm going to give it 30, right down the middle. Give it an average of 30. Okay. All right, Joey, the time has come for you to add a category, which we will then add to the wheel and potentially make canon or a bonus category in the future.
Okay, so I'm going to say overly friendly conversations with strangers.
Okay, so what do you think are good examples of that?
So in Die Hard, I think that the weird conversation with the guy next to him on the plane that's just like, hey, take your shoes off and squeeze it against the carpet. You know, I think that like really everybody that John McClane meets in this movie, it's like he's fairly friendly with Argyle. He's fairly friendly with...
Sits in the front seat.
Yes, sits in the front seat.
It's like straight flirting.
Yeah, like Reginald. I guess straight flirting is like a good. That's a good like catch-all.
Distillation, right?
Yeah,
should I just call
it
that straight flirting.
Yeah,
straight flirting. That's what you want to call this category.
Yeah. Like I like that. Reginald Val Johnson. I feel like there's a lot of straight flirting there. I mean, I think that I know this category is for this movie, but I would say in this movie, like a 70.
70.
I mean, I think you could also argue that Bruce Willis and. What's his name? Hans Gruber. Like, there's something sort of like, will they, won't they, about the two of them?
A master sub relationship.
Actually, yeah.
Definitely.
I'm upping this to 75. That's a good. 75. That's a good point.
I'll give it an 80 because I feel like Bruce Willis just sort of like, as a movie star, just sort of flirts as a default setting.
With the that one, he has two flirtatious moments on the plane with the stewardess.
True.
Like there's like,
but I think he's even like super friendly with like whoever he runs into. Like he's always like trying to charm people.
Sure. Not anymore. Not for the last 30 years in the movies, but he used to try. All right. Now we're into the bonus category.
So these categories are just bonus. So if it doesn't score well, it won't penalize the category, but it's just going to be, we're now going from 0 to 10. So it's that percentage bonus of the points that it already has for these categories.
Oh, okay. Got it.
All right, the first one, makeover montage. How would you rate Die Hard for makeover montages?
I think that like the closest thing this has to a makeover montage would be, it's not a montage, but like
when he dresses up the dead body as Santa Claus. Not definitely a montage, but it is a makeover. That is a makeover.
For sure.
And then I feel like there's kind of a montage to him like pulling the glass out of his bloody feet. And like, that's, I guess that's a makeover from like glassy feet to not glassy feet. So, sure. You know, I'd say a three.
I don't think there's a lot. I'll give it a 0.5.
0.5. Yeah, I'll give it a one for the ho, ho, ho. Give an average of 1.5%. All right, the next one. Cheerworthy cameos.
I mean, I think that, I know that it's not a cameo, but Reginald Val Johnson's gun at the end. That's a
we do cheer for that.
Yeah, we cheer for that, and I guess
we're
meant
to cheer.
Should we? Yeah, we're supposed to.
That's true.
Yeah, once again, I would
shot
say
it's so
worthy of that cheer, right?
I yeah, think so.
I would say that's a, I mean,
he learned to kill again. Yay!
Yeah, actually, yeah, wait a second. Now that you phrase it like that, I'm like, yeah. Yeah, like two.
I'm afraid I'm gonna have to go zero on this one.
Zero. What about when they mentioned Wolfgang? What's his face? Ellis or new?
Yeah,
Thornburg mentions it's Wolfgang. I'm friends with. Also, she's in two scenes, so it's not quite. But Gail Wallen, the female newscaster, is our friend Mary Ellen Trainer from Death Becomes Her.
Oh, nice. So many people, so many crossovers for this movie,
and also comic actor Rick Overton as the power guy from The Burbs.
I mean, Run DMC is in the soundtrack. Like, I kind of cheered when like Christmas and Hollis played. You know, we talked about that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What are you giving it, John?
A 0.5 for Christmas time and Hollis.
A 0.5. I got a 0.5 out of you.
Yeah, I feel like that's one we're definitely making meals out of crumbs with this category.
Yeah, sure. I'll give it a 3. I'm giving it a 3.
3 for what?
One. I just told you, Rick Overton.
Okay.
And Mary Ellen Trainer, even though she's in two.
She's more than one. Okay.
And then mentioning Wolfgang. I thought that was funny. All right, next category. Pool trouble.
Okay, there's the
aforementioned waterfall.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't like, have to dive into it to escape an explosion.
Yeah, and it also, it's not in good shape. Like, it gets in trouble after the building explodes.
That's true.
Like, you know, it's like there's leaky pipes everywhere. So
they're
going
to have to change that filter.
Yeah, so like I'd say 5.
A 5.
I'll give it a 1 for that waterfall.
A 1? He has to dive into it to escape an explosion.
It's a pool.
Sure, sure.
Jeez, I think your bias is coming through, John.
Okay, Mark.
We're going to hear from fans. I'm going to give it a 4. Giving it a 3.33, tying it with nothing. But it's 3 points higher than The Shining. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, because The Shining doesn't have a pool. It just has water. Or it's just snow, you know.
All right, next category. This one might be tough. Witches. How witchy is Die Hard? I mean, I would say maybe Hans Gruber has a kind of witchy energy in terms of like the architect of this plan. There's like something, and the fact that he's always reading from his little book.
Yeah, I'm going to say
there's something kind of like a witchy there, but not a lot. We're really grasping.
Okay,
yeah,
so this is a stretch, but witches, you know, I feel like from my understanding, primarily come from like kind of like just like Wiccan religions and Wiccan stuff, which have a European origin. And a lot of like witch stories were about like basically like, you know, it's just like making the other seem weird. It's just like there's this weird lady, sure. She's up to no good because she's weird. So, you know, by virtue of these being European terrorists who, like, you know, for like us Americans are supposed to be immediately villains because they have accents and
sure,
long hair.
Yeah.
You know, I think that honestly makes this seem kind of like, if you were like really dive in a little bit witchy, you know, nobody really flies around on a broomstick, you know, people get thrown out of windows, but I wouldn't necessarily say that counts. But I think that in like the root core of like why we don't like these villains is similar to the root core of why we're not supposed to like witches in traditional stories.
Okay.
I would say in terms of witchiness, this is a 6.
A 6. Other.
I will give it a 0.5 for the argument that you
wow,
just
John.
Gave.
Yes.
I'm going to give it a 2. Well, they say that Elizabeth Bathory, she's like, because it's called like the Blood Countess. I forget what year. Like, she's like considered like the female counterpart to Dracula. They used to say she like bathed in blood to like keep her youth. But like historians have since come out and said like, No, she was just powerful and people were afraid of a powerful woman. So they would make up these crazy stories about her.
Yeah, I feel like if you were to, in a post-apocalyptic world where we don't have any media, but people are telling stories of Die Hard like it's some old legend, I feel like we would bestow magical properties to the terrorists just by virtue of how like legends go. So like, you know, in that, you know, what you're saying about the Blood Countess, I feel like that would happen to Die Hard 100 years from now, assuming that like we only kind of tell Die Hard from like via the game of telephone.
From like cave paintings or infer from the poster, you know.
Yeah.
All right. The next category, gay actors playing gay roles.
I mean,
well, there's the kissing man. Do we know
what did your research find on him?
I'm looking at P. Randall Bowers is his name.
Okay.
He's also in Die Hard 2, and he's done a lot of he's Bruce Willis's stand-in.
Oh, funny. That makes sense.
Interesting.
That really colors that whole exchange a little differently, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It really does. That's all the information I have so far.
It colors that whole exchange in a weird way of Bruce Willis wasn't comfortable being kissed on the cheek by a male stranger. He was like, right? It must be
a
somebody
version of himself.
Yeah, it must be me that I'm being kissed.
So
by.
You're saying
yes.
So you're saying this guy's career is basically just being a stand-in for Bruce Willis.
Looks like he's an actor on Twitter. He calls himself a home renovation restoration enthusiast. Okay, he's a dachshund dad. Political and social justice enthusiast, authentic and present person. Okay. So
I'll give it a one. I'll say that.
Yeah, I'll say that. I'll also go for one.
A one for the progressive
projection. Yes,
Randall Bowers. I'll also give it a one. All right, next category: themes of mothers. Well, there's Holly.
I mean, there is sort of the subplot of like going to the daughter. You know, like the daughter, the news reporter going to the daughter, and that sort of thwarting or putting people at risk. So there's a little bit.
There is also the.
Sorry, I have an update. P. Randall Bowers on October 12th, 2020, posted a picture that said, "If being gay was a choice, I'd be gayer."
So he's gay.
Yes. Okay, so that gets 10. Hey, that's 100%. There's one gay character, maybe gay character in the movie, and he's played by a gay man. So that gives it a 10, 100%.
A 10. Do you want to update your score, John?
I'm going to hold strong at 1 because he really has, he's an under 5.
But for all the gay roles, they are all 100% played by gay men.
Yeah.
I'm gonna stay strong with the one.
Look, wow. If this was
real Hans Gruber over here,
I guess it might be something where, like, if that was a native character who had one line, he was played by a native actor, like native Hollywood would cheer and throw a parade.
Sure.
So it's sort of like looking at it through that lens. We're just hungry for scraps.
I'm
hungry for scraps. So yes, I will. Especially in the '80s, like I stick by my 10.
I'm gonna up it to a 7. Given an average of 6, which is the highest we've had in 14 movies. Do better, Hollywood, as I keep saying.
Yeah, we are celebrating far below the whatever the bar should be.
It shouldn't be this high.
I legitimately cheered in my seat, if you look back at the video, at the idea that this character is played by a gay man. Yes.
All we're going off of is one little gif meme he posted, but good enough. All right, what were we saying about themes of mothers?
Themes of mothers.
Themes of mothers, I do think that there is some symbolism when he goes into the air vent of being reborn again.
So film theory.
Yeah. So like, you know, with that in mind, I would say, I mean, it's about like a mother is essentially the co-lead and it's about like, you know, it's about parenthood, but like, it's like about the mother, like, you know, like wanting to be her own woman while also being a good parent to her kids.
Sure.
Yeah.
And in the end, she rejects that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that was like, yeah, when she takes up the Rolex, I'm not sure if that's a good thing that she's like rejects professional.
It goes back to McClane.
Yeah. McClane, a very bloody and weird man who's probably a sociopath.
He's going to need a lot of therapy. Everyone is.
I don't think he is. I don't think that affected him in any way.
No, felt nothing.
He felt no emotions. Yeah, I'm gonna say a six. I think a six.
A six. Not until we Plaza as womb.
I'll give it a 0.5 just for your argument.
0.5. Jesus Christ, John.
You think Die Hard is all about motherhood?
I'm not saying it's all about. I'm only going to give it a 2.
Oh, all right.
But I'm just noticing a theme.
I'm saying there are
5.
Themes of motherhood.
Yes.
Sure.
All right. Next category. You might do very well here. Dramatic smoking.
Oh, yeah. 100. I mean, 10.
It's constant. And he's so, it's such like a Western. He's like smoking like a cowboy. You know, he's like smoking like he's in like a Gary Cooper movie.
It's not just dramatic smoking cigarettes. It's also dramatic smoking from gun barrels. Yes, like when Reginald Bell Johnson shoots that guy, it's like legit. You see the barrel of the gun and it's like there's a billow of smoke coming out of it.
I guess they used like a new, and this movie was like, they used a new kind of blank that was like super loud. And like, that's why you have the big like flares at the end of the guns, which is like a new thing for the time. And I guess now Bruce Willis is like 66% deaf in one of his ears because of this movie.
I mean, honestly, wow. As a viewer, worth it.
Worth it. Thank you, Bruce.
There's also, after they blow up the building, when Bruce Willis climbs out of the pool, that's like dramatic smoke, you know.
That's him coming out of the placenta.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's him continuing to be born again a second time.
Baptism, you know.
So yeah, I'm going to say, yeah, I think, yeah, 10. I think 10.
10. 0.5, John?
No, I'm going to say, I mean, like Bruce, you know, he smokes in the airport, he smokes in the limo. Robert Davi, one of the FBI agents, has the
we
like,
love Robert
anymore,
Davi.
You know, but I still don't think it's like a huge movie with a lot of dramatic smoking. So I'll give it a 4.
Wow. True lunacy in action. I'm going to give it an 8. Give it an average of 7.33. All right.
Yay.
Final in the bonus categories. Quips. How quippy is Die Hard?
I mean, ho, ho, ho. Now I have a machine gun. I feel like a lot of Hans Gruber lines are quippy.
The iconic.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay, Melon Farmer. I mean, I feel like that's just, that's like a top tier movie. Like exactly. In the history of movies, that's like a top 10 movie quip.
Those stupid AFI lists, this will be the top 10 of one of those.
Yeah. So I'd say by virtue of that, 10.
10.
I'll give it an 8 for quips.
John, coming out of your shell.
I was being shy before now, but now I feel confident.
Oh, you could come out.
I'm going to give it a 10 because there is pretty much, it is that action movie thing of like a one-liner after every kill.
Yeah. There really, it's like, I don't know, what is the thing of like, you? It's like, when John McClane kills the guy from under the table, the guy says, you shouldn't have hesitated.
Yeah.
And John McClane fucking murders his legs. And then he says, noted or something.
Thanks for the advice.
Yeah.
Also, who is he saying that to? Like,
he's a psychopath.
He's crazy.
Who was he smiling to when he looked at the Santa hat and dressed up a dead body that he just murdered as Santa Claus?
Maybe they
why did
like
we cut
another
away from that scene?
Maybe they need another Die Hard where it's revealed like he knows he's in a movie. It's almost like a Last Action Hero kind of thing this whole time.
Oh yeah,
right.
Just a pitch. All right, finally. Second to final, we are into the iconic categories.
So we're back to 0 to 100, and these are like the bigger categories, the sort of more umbrella categories.
All right. The first one, on a scale of 0 to 100, Joey, how homoerotic is Die Hard?
I mean,
look, we've already talked about the kissing, man.
I would say, honestly, because of like, it's something I was thinking about a lot when choosing this movie. I feel like there just is so much like phallic imagery, and there is the theme of dominance is so potent in this movie. So sure. Like, you know, with that regard, I would say, I think like a 40.
Yeah. I think with the movie itself, it's just kind of the party goer guy. But I think also like Die Hard as a movie would translate so well into gay porn so easily and so seamlessly.
Yeah, it's called Die Hard.
Yeah, you know what I mean? There's just that. There's just like every, if you think of every action sequence as like a different, you know, like sex sequence.
Scene.
It really goes, you know, like it really scans really easily. So I will give it, but the movie itself is not super homoerotic.
Yeah.
But I'll give it a 68.
68. Wow.
So I'll bump it up to 50 then. Like I do 60. Think. And I'll agree with that 68. I'll jump up to 68.
68.
Yeah, because I think it is. It's like an undertone thing.
it is an undertone thing. That's why I'm going to give it a 35. It's too undertone for me.
Oh, your bias is really coming through, Mark.
Hardly. This is the one low thing I've scored. I give an average of 57, which is 50 points higher than Mermaids. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Next in the iconic categories, over the top wardrobe.
Over the top wardrobe.
As we said, there's a lot of male shoulder pads in this movie.
Yeah, sure, a lot of shoulder pads.
And I also think like just the fact that like there is like a weird sort of plot twist about a Rolex.
Sure.
So there's something about like
Rolexes are
given
top,
like a
right?
like a higher status than maybe, you know, like for the than you might expect them in real life.
Hey,
so there's something there, you know what I mean?
So it's over the top. I also do feel like when the movie was made, I don't think the intent of John McClane's wardrobe was to be over the top, but I feel right. like because it's so iconic, it's become over the top.
Yeah. Like the lack of shoes. Is there a more bold, you want a bold shoe choice? How about no shoes?
Yeah, bold shoe choice is no shoes, also broken glass and blood.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's bold. I don't know. What do you guys think on that?
I don't think there's much here. It's all because that's not really what it's about. And it all looks like very like of the time.
Right.
But nothing's like really crazy.
I think anytime a movie is sort of set in like a very limited time, like one night, people don't have an opportunity to give you multiple looks. So it's hard to sort of like have more opportunities for looks. But I think it's pretty like not too crazy. Like if you saw someone wearing any of those clothes on the street, you wouldn't be like, what's that story there? So for me, I'll give it 35.
I do think the European terrorists, I feel like, have very like iconic. It's just like a lot. They're all wearing essentially like black turtlenecks with like gold chains and stuff. Like it is just very like Euro trash terrorist.
Very well tailored.
Yeah. I would say, I'm going to say 45.
45. I'm going to go 25. On this,
More bias.
John said 35, given an average of 35. All right, finally, on a scale of 0 to 100, how campy is Die Hard?
Campy. I mean, I think that like the once again, I'm leaning on this a lot, but I feel like dressing a dead body as Santa Claus for a bit is and drawing on his chest is. I feel like that's campy.
Sure. I think what's his name? The Ellis, like as the could be like, Booby, we're gonna do that. You know, like his like
he's super
guy.
Campy.
He's super sort of like really leans into that in a fun way.
Yeah, I think that like everything Alan Rickman does has some level of camp to it.
Fair.
Yes.
Like it's just the way that like the nasally way he talks. It's just like it's just like there's just like a little to it.
He's
just was his first movie too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he started acting when he was in his mid-40s, I think. Alan Rickman, campy. I think that Argyle is weirdly played a little campy. Like, I think that his limo,
broad,
the giant bear. Yeah, the giant bear. We're grasping at straws, so I would say, like, 20.
20.
I would say it's, like, a kind of like a straight campy movie in the fact that, like, all of those beats are sort of very extra. But yeah, it's not like super fun campy. I'll give it a 20 as well.
20.
Yeah, that's I actually had a long conversation with like our mutual friend Matt Mazzani about this movie as it relates to like it's like I never really thought of straight camp as a term until it was pointed out to me like within the past week. And I'm like, yeah, this is very it's like straight camp, which isn't like fun, you know, yeah.
That's like a lot of
it's a different kind of fun,
I feel would fit.
Yeah.
All right, here's my quick list of campy things I noticed. Office Christmas parties, fancy parties where waiters walk around with food and drinks on trays. Poinsettias, having a room devoted to scale models. Placing a bet with a coworker on whether your boss is going to shoot someone. An AM/PM clerk being very judgmental over your snack haul. Harvey Johnson, a newscaster who doesn't know where Helsinki is. Turning around and saying, Gennaro, Miss Gennaro. Feeling insecure due to the withering glance of a stuffed bear. A peckish hostage taker. The name Dwayne, a sleazy 80s cokehead exec since sincerely using the word capiche. The book Hostage Terrorist, Terrorist Hostage, A Study in Duality. Two FBI agents named Johnson. Christmas Tape saves the day. And finally, the beauty of Al being able to kill again. So there's a lot of fun. Is this the campiest thing I've ever seen? No, but I'm going to give it a 40 in camp. I think there's some fun stuff here. Giving it a 26.67. All right, finally, we're into the crown jewels.
Yeah, so these categories, we all agree on. It's yes or no. There's no scale. It's just we all agree or not.
I guess so we're a jury. Got it.
Yes.
We are a jury.
Mm-hmm.
Three angry men?
Yes.
All right. First one, 15% bonus point for a positive portrayal of homosexuality. Does Die Hard have a positive portrayal of homosexuality?
I mean, that kissing man seems nice.
I don't know if I would, because I don't think that's quite doing enough.
It doesn't. It's not negative. I wouldn't call it a homophobic movie.
No.
Yeah, but like John McClane's, I don't know, John McClane's reaction is like, it's like on an edge. So I would say no. I mean, I want it to be yes, but I would say no.
He also makes some disparaging comments about being butt fucked at some point, as if that makes you weak.
I don't remember
all
that
the strongest
part.
Men's I know.
Right. Finally, negative 50% if this is the movie Boat Trip.
This is not the movie Boat Trip, so it will not be penalized 50% of its points.
All right, not the movie Boat Trip. Good, good, good.
All right.
That's it,
Joey. How do you think you did?
So, I mean, there were a lot of high categories, a lot of low categories. I'm going to stick to my, I don't think that this cleared number one, but I feel like it's probably either two or three.
Of the Christmas movies, you mean?
Yeah, of the Christmas movies.
All right. Well, I will tell you exactly how you did. Out of a total possible 2,406.93 points, Die Hard has scored 1,569.60, giving it a percentage of 65.21, making it 25th gayest movie ever. Not as gay as, bear with me, not as gay as Bring It On, but gayer than Ginger Snaps. And it is also behind Meet Me in St. Louis. Meet Me in St. Louis has 66.49. Die Hard has 65.21.
So close.
So 1.28.
So it's, wow. the second gayest Christmas movie we've got. Yes,
second
that's exactly
gayest
what I
Christmas
thought.
Movie.
That's exactly what I thought. Yes,
that was hard to do.
I'm so I earnestly was like, I feel like this movie will score high.
I think it did pretty well.
Yeah.
I think you were helping. You got that shattered glass.
The shattered glass definitely helped.
Oh, yeah. The shattered glass really came in. Really came in the clincher.
You really did well there.
Christmas came early with that shattered glass spin.
Yeah.
Christmas was saved. Joey, thank you so much for doing this.
Yes.
Been a pure delight to have you. Is there anything you'd like to plug, promote, or shill for at this time?
Thanks for having me. This was a ton of fun. Let's see, I guess I'll promote, you can follow me on Twitter at Joey Tainment. You can follow me on Instagram at Joey Clift with like five or six eyes, I forget. And then, let's see, other stuff to promote. I don't think I've got a ton of, other stuff to promote right now. Is this going to drop in November or December?
December, the Wednesday after Thanksgiving.
Okay. So, we're recording this in November, which is Native American Heritage Month. So I'm going to promote, if you did nothing to celebrate Native American Heritage Month in November, shame on you.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Joey. And
we'll be right back. We're back.
That was fun.
So much fun.
Sorry you don't like Die Hard.
I did think it was like just a little bit too long, even though like I get like the switched watchness of it. I get how like every beat of it is either setting
something up or
paying something off. Like all that is good. But I just this time watching it, I found myself being a little impatient at times. Maybe it's the world that we're living in. Who knows?
I mean, you watched it a few days before the election, I'm assuming.
I watched it yesterday. So, yeah.
That'll do it.
That'll do it. Speaking of doing it, we got a review on iTunes. This one comes from AJY Pickled Surface.
Okay.
It's 5 stars. Says, this is such an intricate and phenomenal premise. I love the series so much. I originally was going to watch the episodes with my favorite guests, but after the first episode I watched, Paul F. Tompkins, naturally, I had to watch the rest of them immediately. Very, very, very glad I stumbled across this wonderful podcast. Well, thank you, AJY Pickled Surface.
That's so nice.
That's very sweet. We're glad you stumbled across our podcast as well.
Thank you to PFT for bringing him in.
Yes, exactly. He's a real inflection point for a lot of people.
He's a great inflection point.
Indeed. So if you haven't yet, we would love it if you guys would go on iTunes and rate it 5 stars and give us a fun review. That really helps the algorithm and helps people find our podcast.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram, or follow us, excuse me. That's follow true. Us on Twitter or Instagram at Two Old Queens, CWO Old Queens. You can follow me on Letterboxd, where I maintain the current rankings and all the categories and all that stuff.
Right. If you have any questions or thoughts or things you want to tell us, you can email us at Two Old Queens, CWO Old Queens at gmail.com. We also have merch. If you go to TeePublic and search Two Old Queens, you can find a lot of fun, all kinds of knickknacks and delightful things you can get as gifts for yourself or for loved ones for the holidays.
And we got a Patreon, patreon.com/twooldqueens, a whole new episode every Monday.
That's true. It's very exciting.
There you go.
That's it.
Well, let's go watch the news, John.
Let's see where we're at. Where the world is at. You listening to this, you already know.
You know, we don't know, but
we're about to find out.
We're about to find out. Be safe. That's all we can hope for.
That's true. Alrighty.
I hope this week greens that's been boarded up on Hollywood Boulevard is okay. That's all we can hope.
Alrighty. All right. Goodbye. Now it's time for credits. We got music by Danny Cohen,
artwork by Connie Shin,
and special thanks to Alex Arche and Mike Rennie.
Bye.
Goodbye. We didn't get that right.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.